Okay, one, two, three. So good morning, everyone. My name is Roel Schellens. I'm a mobility architect in the worldwide modern devices COE. So what that means is that our team helps early deployments of Windows, Windows Phone, Windows Desktop, with customers that are just starting to roll out. So for the last half year, we have been working on Windows Phone 8.1, also Big Windows 8 and 8.1. At the moment, we are onboarding a lot of new customers for Windows 10 and Windows Mobile. So what I want to do today is to share some of that experience with you. So the objectives, so the agenda for today, so we first talk about the objectives, the Windows Phone 8.1 Enterprise Management Overview. So I'm going into a very quick overview because there is an assumption for this session that you have a general idea about what Windows Phone 8.1 can do and the capabilities, but I'll quickly go through a highlight of those capabilities. The technical infrastructure for Windows Phone that is required, because that's what I want to spend the main part of this presentation on, because that is also what organizations are spending most of their time on. Buying phones is one thing, but that phone also needs to be managed in a proper way. So addressing typical enterprise concerns, it's impossible to talk about everything that we have run into in our early deployment program, but the main things I want to highlight here. So it is not always very clear to customers what the Windows updates do and what they consist of and how they are deployed by mobile operators and how they land on the device. So a lot of enterprises want to understand that better. So that's what I want to talk about a little bit. Applications, application management, the main thing there is what customers want to achieve in that area is, of course, that the users get the right applications, but they want to make sure that the enterprise data that the applications are using is protected. So, and then things like containerization or blocking certain store apps, that is an area where a lot of customers spend a lot of time on when they design and plan for a Windows Phone solution. Certificates is, I think, the area where organizations spend most of their time on. When you work with mobile solutions, you cannot rely on Active Directory and Kerberos, so you need to rely on other ways of authentication, and that will be username, password, but most organizations choose to do that based on cert auth, certificate authentication, and that also requires a certain infrastructure that needs to be put in place. Remote access solution, several ways to provide access to internal resources. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Selective wipe, and what I'm not going to talk about a lot in the presentation, but I will touch on it when I talk about some of the other points, is identity. That's another area where you need to think of when you think about mobile solutions as well. The objectives, learning what to expect when deploying Windows Phone 8.1. Learn how to overcome the most common concerns and challenges when deploying Windows Phone 8.1 and accelerate your Windows Phone deployments through sharing lessons learned. So who in the audience is currently evaluating or implementing Windows Phone in their organization? Just to get an idea about. Okay, thank you. So like I said, there is sort of a prerequisite for this session, and that is that you are familiar with the enterprise capabilities of Windows Phone. So enrollment, configuration management, certificate management, not in detail. I will explain a little bit more during the session about those components, but the general concept, it is assumed that you understand that. Also secure access, so enterprise Wi-Fi, VPN, Exchange Server, EAS, and S/MIME. Not going to talk too much about S/MIME in this session. I will touch on it a few times. In other presentations I've done for TechEd North America, I've set up a whole S/MIME demo, so you could always go to Channel 9 to have a look at that. So Windows Phone 8.1 Enterprise Management Overview, because that is where most of the infrastructure will be place. So I'm going through the enterprise management lifecycle for Windows Phone and touch on all these points. So the first thing you want to do with a phone is enroll the phone into your management environment. So that could be and that management environment could be Windows Intune, or it could be any other MDM vendor like AirWatch or Mobile Iron. So after that phone is enrolled, what will happen is that policies, profiles, and certificates are pushed to that phone. So policies, think about settings for passwords or how a phone is configured, and profiles are things like email profile. So you set up the company corporate email profile for the user so the user doesn't have to configure all those settings themselves, or a VPN profile. Oh, and of course, last but not least, the certificate component. So that is a very important thing to install, because authentication is important for companies, and this is of course also related to the identities that you use. And that in most enterprises we work with happens with certificates. So once that phone is used by the user will need applications. So there are different ways to get applications. You can sideload applications that you built yourself or that you got from an ISV, or you can install them from the store, or you can point to the store through deep links. So you can do that in a company portal that you install on the phone. And those applications need to be managed. Organizations might want to allow or deny applications from the store, and I'm going into a little demo there because that's also something that is not always well understood. So asset and inventory and assistance. So what we can do there are things like remote lock, remote ring, password or PIN reset, and inventory collection. And at the end of the lifetime of that phone, you can, of course, unenroll it. There are several ways of doing that. The end user can unenroll the phone through the company portal or through another website, or the administrator can unenroll the phone through a full wipe or a selective wipe. And the selective wipe is also called enterprise wipe, meaning that it should only remove all the enterprise managed and pushed content on that phone. And that's very important because that's not always well understood, and it's also not very well documented at the moment. And for security, security departments in organizations, they really need that to get through that security approval. A short slide about what is what has been made available in GDR 1 and GDR 2. So GDR 1 and GDR 2 are the internal names that we use for updates for phone. So you won't see the name GDR in any of your updates that you get on phone, but Microsoft releases a GDR, and that contains all the new updates for the operating system. So from an enterprise perspective, what was in GDR 1 is some improvements around SMIME. So when companies were using SMIME in a different way as initially expected, the certificate picker, that was an automatic process within the phone, couldn't find that certificate that was installed on the phone, so therefore they now have implemented a certificate picker so that the user can always select the certificate and it would still work. So there have been some improvements there. Certificate-based authentication for line of business applications, that was not possible in the AK, we don't call it RTM version, but the AK version of Windows Phone. Some other things like enable third-party VPN support for Cisco and Mobile Iron, the Sentry. And that does not mean that that is the plugin. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with how VPNs work on phone, but you can have an IPv2 VPN, or you can have a plugin of a vendor that you download from the store, and then that application can set up the VPN connection for you. So support for DFS channels on 5 gigahertz. So there were some issues when you had a hidden network in those situations and the phone would not work, and some minor updates like password protection for Word documents And of course, a lot of fixes were included as well. GDR2 is still in development, so can't talk about that too much. But if you are an organization that is blocked because of certain reasons, that and we are planning to implement that in GDR2, then we can communicate that under NDA with most of our early deployment customers. So the typical infrastructure for Windows Phone. And what I'm describing here is based on Microsoft technology. I've got numerous early deployment customers, all the large enterprise customers in the world that were deploying Windows Phone were all within our program. If they were using Windows, then this was how their typical infrastructure would look like. So first of all, they had an Intune tenant in the cloud, and many of them that were already using Azure AD or Office 365 made sure that that tenant was linked. Then on-prem, you need a domain controller, a config manager, because you want to have a hybrid solution. That was the way to get support for Windows Phone 8.1. With the next release and in the roadmap for Intune, there is also a solution where you can have a standalone. But especially for organizations already using Config Manager 2012, it makes, of course, a lot of sense that you have a single pane of view where you have your entire device fleet that can be managed through one console. A certificate authority, because certificates are very important. So Config Manager has a connector to Intune. You will want Azure AD Sync so that your identities in your internal network are synced with your Azure environments. There is ADFS in place in most organizations to make sure there is single sign-on. And the NDES server is sort of the proxy server that enrolls the certificates for the device. But most companies don't want to place that NDES server in the DMZ, and therefore they put a reverse proxy in between. So that reverse proxy can be combined with the web application proxy or the ADFS proxy. There is a fix in the make to make that happen. There is a blog that describes that from Peter Wicklaven, and the link is in the deck. So if you want to implement this scenario, go to that link, and then there are many more articles there that explain how to set this up. So there is also another way of providing remote access from the phone internally, and that is through a VPN solution. And that could be SharePoint. I put SharePoint here as an example, but it could also be Exchange Active Sync. Some customers want to not publish Exchange Active Sync directly to the internet. And of course, you need to register your management system in a public DNS so that when you enroll, that the phone knows based on the UPN to which management server to go. Okay, so my demo environment is a little bit more simple. I put a lot of roles together on a single server, and I didn't have the time to put NDES in there as well, but I don't have the time to demo everything anyway, so this is sufficient for today's demonstration. So, one second. So the first thing that I want to demo is just an enrollment of a phone, just to get an idea about what that looks like. When that phone is enrolled, you will see that the wrong part of the circle is highlighted. The enrollment part of the circle should have been highlighted. So what I'm going to demo is enrollment. Policies, profiles, and certificates will be pushed to the machine, and I'll show you the difference between a policy that is available through Intune Config Manager in the GUI and a policy that you can configure through an OMA URI. And that is very important, because that's what a lot of customers don't know, that if you are using OMA URI, you basically can configure anything on that phone that is supported. So even if Intune hasn't provided the GUI for that yet, even if they don't provide the interface to select, for example, that specific setting and set the value, you can still use OMA URI to set all the settings on that phone. So that is also a very important differentiator compared to other MDMs that I've seen. So just to give you an example how that looks like, but I'll show it to you in the demo as well. So this is through the GUI. This is an example for a password setting. So let me zoom in a little bit. So as you can see here, this is a very simple password setting. So it requires a minimum password length of 4 characters. And that setting is something that is provided by Intune and a combination of Config Manager. Through OMA URI, it works a little bit different. So on the phone, there is a things like configuration settings that can be connected through OMA URI. So in this case, I have a setting that is called Allow Action Center Notifications. And we're all familiar with Action Center in Windows Phone. So if you go and swipe down, then you can see Action Center. But a lot of companies don't want, when that phone is locked, that you can see the different messages that come in when you swipe down from Action Center, because that is a privacy issue. So I can pick up a phone from a table and see what messages come in from that other user. So a lot of users want to, or a lot of companies want to disable that. So there's no GUI for that in Intune or Config Manager, but you can simply configure that through this URI. So the URI is provided at the bottom, the OMA URI. It is quite long, but all the URIs can be found in this document that I've put in the link under here. So that's the MDM protocol document, and all the settings that phone supports can be found in there. So you can basically configure every single setting that that phone supports, even if the MDM doesn't provide a GUI for it, in this case, Intune. So let me quickly switch to okay. So this is a phone that is not enrolled yet in the environment. It has an MSA account set up. So that email address can be used. So there are different ways to enroll a phone. So you can enroll a phone to go to settings and go to workplace and then click add account. Or if you would like, you could send that user an email, but that wouldn't really work if you don't know the email account, of course, that the user is using on the phone. But there is a link that you can put in the email, and then the phone automatically will go to that page as well. So the user doesn't have to look for that setting in settings. The user can then click add account. I will enter the username. A second. And what the phone now is doing is it looks if, based on the UPN of that username, it looks if it can find a server. And it does, because this is the internal server on my in my test environment. And it found it through the DNS server where I have published the CNAME of that management server. So need to add the password, top secret password. And the phone now will be enrolled. So while it is doing that, I'll so the phone is enrolled. If you would want to, you could also later on refresh the policy. So you can trigger a policy refresh from the device. If you are using Config Manager and Intune together, it's very important that you use the latest CU, the cumulative update, because that has speed up the policy refresh quite dramatically, where in the past it could take quite a long time. Now it is, has just become a matter of minutes before those settings are updated. If I now go to the So you can see in the toast at the top of the screen that my email for corporate email is also provisioned. And if I now go down, you will see the device demo corp. And of course, I have set it to username password, so I have to provide the username password. But you could also use certificate-based authentication. So that email that was provisioned is through the email profile. Let me quickly show you where to find that in Config Manager. So under Overview, Compliance Settings, there is a folder called Company Resource Access. The email profile that you just saw on the phone is configured here. And I'll zoom in a little bit later. And there you can see it's an Office 365 email profile of that company. And I've configured it for username password. But you could, if you wanted, also configure this for a certificate. But for the sake of this demo, I've just used that. The other thing that I just showed was the on the slide was the Allow Action Center notification setting. So this is the one that that I just showed in the slide. And as you can see here, it is an OMA URI that is configured. So what does it actually do when it is pushed to the device? So I assume it is now pushed to the device. I'll turn on the device. So when I lock the device and I turn it on and I slide my finger down, I now cannot see any of the Action Center items anymore except for the one on top, but not the emails that I received or any other notifications from WhatsApp or Facebook or whatever that user has configured. Oops. So when I unlock the device, and I don't have to type in a PIN because I'm still within the window of where I don't have to type in a new PIN. But if I now go to Action Center, you will see all those notifications that came in through Action Center. So that is what that setting actually does. And how you will see that in the settings of the phone, you can see here, show notifications in Action Center when my phone is locked. That is now grayed out. So through that OMA URI, I have now configured this phone for the end user in a way that I want it for the enterprise. So it's not something that is available from the GUI of Config Manager Intune, but I can still configure it on the phone perfectly. And it's only something you do once, and you just leave it. So some people say, well, it's very complex, but that OMA URI, but it's a few minutes work, and then it is done. Okay, go back to the slide. So let's go into the areas that a lot of customers have concerns about when we start a project with Windows Phone 8.1. So the first of them is Windows Phone updates. Because most enterprises that are managing devices have a lot of control over the updates. Think about Windows and WSUS, so they control when the updates are pushed to the machine and when the updates are actually installed. So with Windows, it's a little bit different because updates are often made available by Microsoft, but only after the approval of the OEM, and the mobile operator. So there are maintenance releases, as we call them. So that is the OS updates or OEM firmware. So if you, for example, get the Cyan update is not only the OS, but also includes firmware updates. And what you will see is installing update 8 of 10 or 7 of 10. So there are many updates in that package that you get from the Windows update server when you update that phone. What's in them? Addressing customer issues, of course, or call drivers, enabling new features like I just showed in the GDR1 slide. There is also a process behind that, and I'll talk about that in one of the next slides. So the update types, just as a reference, so we have the OS update that is delivered by Microsoft. That update is then provided to the OEM, and the OEM can put other drivers and firmware updates in there as well. And those updates are then packaged, and in the case of Nokia, they're called Apollo, Blue, Cyan, Denim. So you've probably used them if you have seen a Nokia phone before. And then there is also downloadable updates, of course, like language packs. So this is just a typical release life cycle of, for a Windows phone. So the final version is released. So you could compare that with the RTM version of Windows. Then during that time, there will also be QFV, so quick fix engineering fixes. So they have things that need to be fixed very quickly. So an OS is generally used for 12 to 18 months. And well, with Windows 10, that is maybe going to change quite drastically. But up till now, it was always 12 to 18 months. And a GDR, a general distribution release, what I spoke about earlier, is every 4 to 6 months. So if you want to understand what GDR1, or for example, what in GDR1 or GDR2 is, because you won't see that name on your phone, I've put a slide in here that basically states which operating system version. So if you look at OS version, then you will be able to identify which version is what update. So the update process, so what happens is Microsoft provides the AK, or the update, so AK, compare it with RTM, and hands that over to the OEM. The OEM then starts testing with it, and often uses its own flashing tools for that, so nothing happens over the air, it's just the OEM connecting the phone to a computer with a USB cable and testing the update. So when the OEM is happy with that, two things can happen. If it is an open market device, so not attached to an MO, the OEM will go to Microsoft. But if it is an MO device, the OEM first needs to implement all the requirements of the MO as well. So the MO itself, in general, doesn't do a lot of testing or validation. It is often the OEM that gets the requirements from the MO and implements that in the phone. And those requirements could be a specific application that needs to be installed on the phone as well, or some specific drivers that are specific to the OEM, or settings and configuration that needs to be configured by the mobile operator. If that has been done, the OEM will hand it over to Microsoft, and Microsoft places the update on Microsoft Update Server. So all phone updates come from Microsoft Update. So there are no updates coming from a mobile operator or an OEM. They are all coming from Microsoft Update. The OEM does then over-the-air testing. When that is successful, the update is released by Microsoft for general distribution, and you will see them appear on your phone. So there is quite a delay here, and that is also why it is difficult for enterprises to deal with that, because when they identify a blocking issue and they need a fix for that, there could be quite a bit of time before that fix actually is released. And that is also something that is very well known within Microsoft, and we're working on it, and of course within Windows 10 there is a lot of new goodies coming there. So how does Windows Update identify which phone needs to get which updates? It does that based on an applicability check, and these are the attributes that are being checked, so the OS version, the OEM, the mobile operator, and if you have an open market device, then I don't know the exact name, but for mobile operator it probably states open market. And if your phone applies to all those criteria, it will then get those updates to the phone. So that's about updates. So it's something that enterprise customers just need to understand before they really craft that idea. Well, I've got a Nokia 820 here, and it has this OS version, and I have a Nokia 930 here, and it has this OS version. I need them to be the same. But that's not how it works in Windows Phone world. So you really need to accept that this is the update process, and versions could be different. Even if you're using the same mobile operator, they could release different OS versions for different type of phones. So applications, that is also an area where we are often compared with the other platforms, and especially in the containerization and app wrapping place. But Windows Phone uses a different model and a different strategy, so Windows in general, in how we implement security on the phone. And the other thing I talk about is application management. So containerization, what is it? So segregation of corporate apps and data from personal apps and data, typically in an encrypted and password-protected container. And what organizations are most concerned about is the data. The applications they're not very concerned about, but it needs to be, the data needs to be protected, and you should not be able to have an application using sensitive data that you and you do not control that other application. So that is what customers are mostly concerned about, enterprise customers. So leaking corporate data. So why users don't like it? And so the way it has been implemented, so in our program, we don't care which MDM vendor is used. We work with Mobile Iron, we work with AirWatch, we work with Soti, Citrix, Intune. We are the Windows Phone team, and we want to make sure that Windows Phone is adopted within those customers as good as possible. But what I have noticed in some of the organizations where a lot of containerization is used is that you need specific applications, for example, a proprietary email application or a proprietary Internet Explorer application to fulfill that requirement to put everything in a container. And that doesn't give a very good end-user experience in many cases, because they used to use Outlook on the phone, and to have that other application that doesn't, for a lot of users I've spoken with, doesn't really provide a good user experience. The other thing is that if I, for example, use an application like Word, I could be using personal Word documents, but I could also be using corporate documents. So if I now have two containers and I need to switch, where I'm going to put Word in, I can only choose one. So that is also one of the reasons why Microsoft has decided to go in a different direction and has said that we are much more looking at protecting the data. The application by itself is already protected in a separate container. The data that that application is using specifically is in that same container. There is no one who can access that from the outside unless you have defined some capabilities in the manifest of the application. So some of those capabilities could be a save as or a share. That is also something that you will be able to start controlling going forward. So you can control if those capabilities are possible with those specific applications. The data that is stored outside of those applications, so you could, for example, store a Word document on the phone, that's also something we are going to address. And that's where you start using data protection management technologies. So much more looking at the data itself, without the user having to switch different containers and that user experience that comes with it. So that's the direction of Microsoft and why we are not believing completely in the containerization, but we will support that as well, of course, but more from a data perspective. So other application management concerns is the company portal. A lot of enterprises not really familiar with how you provide you access to users to company applications. The company portal is just installed when you enroll the device. It's called the company hub on the phone, but different MDM vendors give a different name to it. Within Intune, it's called company portal. The MSA and store access, so Microsoft account, MSA, is also a concern to some customers. So you can disable that. You can also disable store access. What you can also do is use app allow and deny list. I'll go into an example in a second. The store app submission requirements, a lot of security departments want to understand what Microsoft is doing to ensure that applications that go in the store are secure. There's a link in this slide that points you to what is done in that area. So store apps and data sharing, so the capabilities claimed in the manifest of the applications, I explained that in the previous slide, and the app allow and deny list based on app GUI or publisher name. So what you can do is you can say, I want to prevent, or I only want to allow this and this app. It's not really a workable situation for a lot of companies because there are so many applications, and how are you going to allow those applications that users want, or how are you going to disallow applications that users want? One solution that I've often seen is, for example, this is just an example, is companies say, I want to allow everything from Adobe and Microsoft, but I don't want that Facebook application of Microsoft. And you would say, oh, well, that is allow and deny mixed together, and you can perfectly do that. So in this example, what you see here is the URI for where we say, okay, allow publisher name Adobe Systems and Adobe Systems Incorporated, allow Microsoft Corporation. I need to do Microsoft Corporation because the publisher on the company portal is different as some of the apps that Microsoft puts in the store. And then what you see, and I put it in red, and this makes it sometimes a little bit difficult and doesn't and makes it not work, but if you want to implement something like this, you can use this example. But you don't see, for example, here the slash, because I'm going now to I'm going to allow everything for Microsoft Corporation except for Facebook, and this is the GUID for Facebook. Where do you get all that information from? Just from the company store, from the Windows Phone store. So if you go to that application, that is all published in there. It all needs to be placed in one line. That's what I put under there. And I'm now going to show where you can do that. So here I placed that allow deny list, again under the configuration items. All those configuration items, by the way, are included into a baseline, and that baseline is deployed to my devices collection. So there's the compliance rule when I select edit, and you see it's not really a lot of real estate here where you can place it in, but that single line that I just showed you on the PowerPoint deck, that is what I have to place in this little box. They're probably going to change that. If you've gone to Dilips's presentation yesterday about Intune and what is coming in the next release, they are also going to support URIs in Intune standalone, and they have made the field a lot bigger, so that it's much easier to get a good visible taste on that. I'll show you a little bit. So that what I highlighted there is where you need to place that. And the setting is, again, an Oh My URI setting. And that's set in there. So, and the value is what I showed on the previous screen. So, to show you the user experience on the phone, that is, assuming the policy came down. Yeah, the policy came down. So, when I go to the store, and when I want to find Microsoft. Applications. I first should show you what happens if I select any other applications for Microsoft or Adobe. So let's say that I want to install this application. What you now see is the end user experience where I have not allowed to install any applications from the store except for the ones that I have allowed in the allow deny list that I just showed you. What you see here is the exclamation mark. This app is not available for your device. Tap here for more information. So it basically says that your company has disabled the installation of the application. If I now go to a Microsoft or Adobe application, you will see that there is the install button. And that is because I have allowed that. If I select the Facebook application for Microsoft, you see again, because that's the one of Microsoft that I denied from that list. So it is a bit of playing with that OMA URI that you need to provide, but there are quite a few examples in the MDM protocol guide that I put a link in earlier, but it's all doable to do it in a hybrid way, allow and deny application. Sorry, there was a question. Sorry, it's difficult. The product ID in Config Manager? Oh, in the Windows Store. Yes, so you can find that in the URL. So let's... So the question was, can you show the product ID? So if I go to an application, let me find a decent application, because we're... So for example, Facebook, because that's the one that I was just using. If I now go in here, this is... And I'll make it a little bit bigger. That's the GUID of the application that I use in my allow deny list. Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the... Sorry? Yes, the GUID stays the same. So when there is an update for the application, the GUID stays the same. So a certificate. So a certificate, like I said at the start, is one of the most complex components that organizations implement when they need a mobility solution. It has nothing to do with Windows Phone. It's just if you want mobility on iOS, Android, and you want to use a secure way of authentication, you have the option, username, password, or certificate-based. There is no Kerberos integration with Active Directory on mobile devices. And that's also what you see happening in Windows 10. I believe it is already presented. So next generation credentials, that is also of course going to be supported for mobile devices, but also very reliant on certificates. So it is something you need to get familiar with if you are in the mobility space, and become an expert in at least how it is used within mobility. So on the Windows Phone, it's also very important to start with how work certificates on the phone itself, because that makes it a lot easier to understand what is happening and what needs to happen from a certificate or a PKI infrastructure point of view. So where are certificates stored on the phone? So there is something called the Shared User Certificate Store. And there is a capability that is Shared User Certificates. It is a capability that every application in the Windows Store cannot claim. So if you claim that capability, basically saying, I want to have access to a certificate in the shared user certificate store, your application will not be approved. There's only one application that is in the store that is approved. That's the application from Interseed. But there is a reason for that, because their business is managing of certificates. But for the rest, it is not a capability that can be used by store applications. Because otherwise you could use your enterprise certificate identities as an application and you would have a security issue. So the other place where you can store certificates on the phone is in the application container itself. So if you have the application and only that application needs those certificates to do the authentication in the background, you can just store them in the application itself. So there is no need for that app to have access to the shared user certificate store. So which code can access the shared certificate store? Like I said, first-party apps. So that's the apps that come into the, in the operating system, like the browser, email, client, Wi-Fi, VPN. And what you will see is that those plugins that are provided by other VPN providers that are available in the store, they also have access to the shared certificate store. So there are a few more applications that have access because the certificates that you deploy for your users to get access internally, you want those VPN plugins, of course, to use that, those credentials to get access. And like I said, there is one exception at the moment, and the VPN plugin. So how certificates are protected? So soft certificates, so that will happen standard. So if you push a certificate to the device, it's stored in the shared certificate store. So there's software protection of that and of the private key. Very important is, and this is very different from the other mobile devices, is that on the phone, the private key is generated on the device. And therefore, certificates cannot be enrolled on behalf of the phone or on behalf of the user, because that is what is currently used often on the other devices. And there is a very famous spoofing attack that you can use. If you know the shared secret, then you could basically impersonate yourself as someone else and get certificates and get access to resources you shouldn't have access to. The other, I'll go into that a little bit deeper in a second. So the other place to protect your certificate is the TPM. So every Windows phone has a TPM to protect the private key, which is then stored in the TPM. And you can use virtual smart cards. So even on the cheapest Windows phones, the 520s, virtual smart cards, etc., is supported. They all have TPMs. They all need to comply with those standards. So what is used to deploy certificates to the phone? There are different ways, but the most commonly used, especially in MDM, is SCEP, the Simple Certificate Enrollment Protocol. It's a protocol that was developed in the industry to support network devices and to get certificates to those devices, so X509 version 3 certificates. But it was never really intended to use for mobile devices. But today, that protocol has been adopted by the major vendors, and it is now used for mobile devices. The other way of deploying certificates is through PFX files. So I could, for example, place a certificate in a PFX file, attach it in an email, send it to the user, and the user could then install it. But keep in mind that you then don't have any control over that certificate, because it's not the MDM that deployed the certificate, so you cannot really manage the certificate anymore. So that is an important component of, or an important issue for some companies as well. So looking at the certificate deployment and how that works, especially in Windows Phone and in a combination with the Config Manager and Intune. So let's look at only the components that are relevant. So we have the NDES server, and the NDES server is sort of the proxy where the phone connects to request certificates. So the first thing that happens is I deploy the root certificate. Because when I deploy a certificate to a phone, that certificate needs to trust the CA, of course. That root certificate can easily be deployed, and there's no need for any additional infrastructure for that. So then I define the SCEP profile. And when I define the SCEP profile in Config Manager, which goes to Intune and then to the phone, there is also a challenge included in that. And that is very important, because this is a very very important differentiator, how we, Microsoft, are mitigating that security risk of spoofing when you enroll a device on behalf of someone else. So the device gets the SCEP profile. It still doesn't have the certificate. It only knows I need to go to that NDES server. In most cases in enterprises, it goes through a reverse proxy because they don't want to publish the NDES, which is a certificate proxy, into the DMZ. And the challenge is being presented to the NDES server. There is a policy module on that NDES server that will validate with Config Manager that challenge that it got from the client to make sure that that is a valid challenge, that is a valid request, and that that request really was intended for that client. So that is what we do to ensure that spoofing is not possible in this solution. So if the NDES request cert or if Config Manager said, yes, this is a valid request, then NDES will go to the CA or the RA to request a certificate. And then very important, and this is different on phone than it is on other platforms, is that the private key will be generated on the device itself. This also means that, for example, if you are using S/MIME encryption keys, that you cannot use SCEP. Because in most cases, a user has multiple devices, and you want the same private key on multiple devices to be able to encrypt those emails. And if you generate the private key on the device, it is only available on one device because you cannot export it. It's created as non-exportable. That's important, and therefore for encryption keys, you need a different solution. And some companies use PFX for that, but you could also think at companies like InterC to help in that area. Sorry, there was a question. Yeah, that's
there is no UI to delete
correct.
To
yeah.
Even the trusted CA are not visible
yeah.
on the device.
Yeah, that's. So the question is there any UI? Well, currently there is no UI. But is there? Are there any plans to have a UI in the future to support the PFX deployment of certificates and maybe also a level of automation around that? That is definitely. Yeah. Or the question is also to see inventory of the certificates that are installed through PFX. And that's an important question, and I hear that quite often, because if I do a selective wipe, and I come to that at the end as well, those certificates are not removed because the MDM doesn't know about them, because they are deployed outside of the control of the MDM that you are using, Intune, Mobile Iron, AirWatch, whichever you use. Yeah, that's an important, and the only thing I can say is it will be addressed, but in which way, I don't know if that already has been disclosed in one of the sessions. Challenges with certificates and SCEP, certificate management and troubleshooting, and this is, I think, what you are referring to as well. Enterprises want to make sure that when they deploy certificates, that they also have a way of understanding, okay, that certificate was deployed to the device. I want to see all the attributes, and I want to see it centrally. I don't want to have to go to all of these devices. I cannot ask the user if a specific attribute of a certificate is in the. There is no real management tool on the phone either for viewing certificates. So you really need to go, for example, in an application that supports certificates, to select the certificates and then look at the details. Another area, and I already spoke about it, S/MIME, so don't go into that too deep anymore, but if you're using encryption, then you cannot use SCEP because you can only have a certificate on one device with that private key if you use SCEP, so you will be required to use things like PFX. Non-Microsoft PKI environments could also be a challenge because they don't have NDES, and if you then want a similar solution, as I showed before, with the policy module, you need to start creating and developing other solutions as well. And as role placement is often a challenge, but we now have a way to put it behind a reverse proxy, which has satisfied most enterprise organizations, also because the NDES server needs to be Windows Server 2012 R2 server, and not all enterprises have approved that OS yet, let alone approved for placing it in the DMZ. So now having the option to place it internal, that has made a big improvement for that's what most enterprises are satisfied with. So switching from certificates to remote access, when you implement Windows Phone, organizations often do that because they want to provide users access to internal resources. And there are two main ways of doing that. The first way of doing that is through VPN. And that is what organizations are most familiar with. So that could be through IPv2, so the proprietary or the standard VPN capability available in Phone. But most enterprises use already a VPN solution like Juniper, Cisco, and they want to keep on using that in their Phone platform as well. So that's what we call app-triggered VPN. And that is not to be confused with what they use in iOS, per app VPN. So that's also sometimes creating some confusion with enterprises. On the Windows Phone, only one VPN at a time can be active. Another thing where companies are often concerned about, okay, let's say I have this line of business application that triggers the VPN. So I create a VPN profile, I attach that line of business application to the VPN profile. So now when the line of business application starts on the phone, the VPN is created. Can my Facebook app then use that VPN connection as well? And that is not possible on phone, so that is completely separated. Only applications that are assigned to that VPN profile can use that VPN connection. So that's important for security people. The second way of there's a question.
Yes, you said regarding the Facebook application. So what happens if I can continue to use Facebook while the business application uses the VPN? Is that you're saying?
So the line of business application triggers the VPN connection, then only the applications that are assigned to that VPN profile, so there could be other line of business applications assigned to the same VPN profile, can use that VPN connection.
So I can continue to use my phone?
Yeah, so your other application will use the other connectivity available, so for example the internet or but in the case of those line of business application, they will use that VPN connection.
And there will be no contact possible between the line application and the...
Yeah, so the question is, there is no contact possible between the line of business application and the other application that I, for example, got from the store? And the answer is no, because each application within the Microsoft model is stored in its own container, which is not accessible by other applications. So I already spoke about the VPN plugins. Virtual smart card support is something that comes back quite often as well. That is something that is coming to in VPN support. At the moment, we support virtual smart cards for S/MIME, and we support virtual smart card for secure browsing in Internet Explorer. And now we are also going to have virtual smart card, and that was what I was talking about at the beginning, GDR2, so the next update for Windows Phone. It is the plan, so no commitments, that there will be virtual smart card support for VPN as well, because that's what quite a few larger organizations want to have. And the other thing in relation to virtual smart cards It's not something that is, so it is supported out of the box. So every phone can support virtual smart cards, but you need an enrollment application to create the virtual smart card and place the certificates in there. So that is something that you can or develop yourself, or you can use a third party like, for example, Interseed, that has that enrollment application and creates the virtual smart card, and then you can use those certificates there and virtual smart cards can of course also be used for your line of business applications, assuming that your line of business applications have the built-in code to support that. The other way of providing access to internal resources is through a reverse proxy. And the Microsoft reverse proxy that we have is the web application proxy. There are some challenges there, because in some cases they want the web application proxy to connect to the backend using Kerberos. And that has something to do with SharePoint in most cases where we work with enterprise customers. The other thing you could do is, for example, use certificate-based authentication to the backend. But what happens in SharePoint, and I'm not a SharePoint expert in any way, but this is why customers often don't want to use cert auth against SharePoint, is that a different profile is created for the user in SharePoint when you use cert authentication compared to Kerberos or username password. Meaning that if you are in the office logging on with your desktop to SharePoint, you would have a different experience because you're using a different profile as that you would with your mobile device that is using certificate-based authentication. So this is why they want prefer Kerberos authentication to the backend, because SharePoint is the most commonly internal resource where companies want to provide access to. So, selective wipe. One of the feedback we got from quite a few customers is that it was not 100% clear what is actually wiped from the device. They wanted to have a complete list what was wiped from the device and how that worked. It's not really well documented. It is documented what the concept and the process of a selective wipe is, but not a lot of details there in relation to the details of the content that is actually wiped. So we now have some documentation. It's not published yet, but we use it especially with our early deployment customers that need to get that security approval of the phone. That's where we then use those documents. So we expect that those documents eventually will be released as well, but if you have problems with your security department in this area, feel free to reach out, and it's something we can share. What is wipe? So that is what companies want to know. And like I said earlier, what is wiped is everything that is managed and deployed through the MDM. Maybe it's not 100% true, but that's the general rule of thumb that you can use. So, for example, that PFX certificate that was deployed is not wiped from the device. So, things like, for example, the email profile that was created. So, the one that I just showed that appeared on my device. The VPN profiles, all the profiles, so the Wi-Fi profiles. Enterprise issued certificate basically means SCEP deployed certificate through the MDM. Network profiles, I already mentioned that. Enterprise deployed apps, so that those are site loaded applications. Any data associated with enterprise deployed apps, so if those apps have data, that will be removed and wiped as well. Enterprise issued device policies. What you will see, for example, if you do a wipe, that policy that I showed you earlier that was grayed out, it will then become configurable again, but the setting might stay the same. So if I had forced, for example, that's what I did as well, a password policy, that password policy will stay there, but you will be able to disable it. when the device is wiped. So let's look at an enrollment of a device. So there are two ways to unenroll a device. I'll show. Before I unenroll the device, there it is. So before I unroll the device, I quickly wanted to show you something else. So if you use the allow and deny rule that I showed earlier, keep in mind that any application that was already on the device can also not be used anymore. So you see the ones that are grayed out, they were already on the device after I unrolled it. So they cannot be used as well. So they are disabled. So when I wipe the device and when I do an enterprise wipe, so those applications become available again. The other thing I want to show you is the company portal. So this is the company portal that you can use to install applications that are line of business applications that have been made available by the IT administrator, or where you can create deep links to the store. So basically, the IT administrator says, this is an application that you might need, for example, a PDF reader in the store, and you can install it. So the first time that I use that company portal, I need to log on, of course, because the company portal was just installed when I enrolled. And it now identifies the UPN. That's why I had to publish it on a public DNS. And I need to type in my super secret password. So the reason why I want to show you this in relation to device wipe, the end user can use this as well to wipe devices. So if I go to devices in the company portal, I see that I have two devices. And the reason why I see two devices is that I also enrolled this user to a virtual, to my phone emulator on the phone as a backup. So I can then identify it by, this is my Nokia Lumia 820, so that must be this device that I have. And the other one shows Microsoft Virtual, so that's the emulator that is running on this machine. So that's how I could identify the different devices. So if I select one of them, I can then select an enroll. Before I do that, I can do a selective wipe as well. So if I click that bin at the bottom, it will be an enrolled and trigger a selective wipe. So the other thing I wanted to show you, and this is very simple. I've got two applications here, the Shaped app, and that is what I have published in Config Manager through Intune through the phone. So I could install that application, so you could see this as a line of business application. You could also put links here to the Windows Phone Store, so that the user can install those applications as well. And especially if you use an allow deny list, it is very useful then to which applications you allow to put them in here. And you can also create categories, etc. And if you have new apps in here. So for now, I'll see the second time when I open the store, I don't have to provide the credentials anymore. So let's see, this was the virtual one, so I need to unenroll the other one. So I can do it from the console, or I can do it from the phone. I do it now for the phone because it is it's a little bit quicker for the purpose of this demo. So the device is unenrolled, and I would now need to see some messages, some toast that at the top of the screen that say, for example, you don't need a password anymore, but you still have a password. So let me go to workplace. So this will take about 5 minutes. We only have 5 minutes left, so I'll speed it up a little bit and I'll delete it here. So you see then the experience that comes back from Config Manager. So I'm going to unenroll directly from the workplace, and now you will see the messages appearing that were normally triggered then through Config Manager. So if I, you see the email is gone. The applications that were disabled before are now all enabled. If I lock the screen and go here, you now see that I can now see Action Center. So I'm now fully unenrolled, and company portal is also gone. So that's the experience for an enrollment. So key takeaways. So Windows Phone is different. Is a different mobile platform and uses different security model, especially around application and data containerization and wrapping. So I hope I've been able to make that clear. So mobile solutions require new infrastructure to enlighten all those capabilities on Windows Phone. But if you use other devices, you will need it as well. So it's often a misunderstanding that I can buy Windows Phone and I then have all these capabilities from an enterprise perspective. Now you need a supporting infrastructure as well. So keep that in mind. And that's not Windows Phone specific. It is just generic in mobility. The supporting infrastructure is often new to organizations and therefore is perceived as complex. It's with every new thing, and the whole industry is really moving to at least components of its organization to a mobile solution. So sooner or later you'll need it somewhere in the organization. So the investment made today for mobile solutions prepares you for the future. And this is what I was just talking about, but it's also in relation to what is coming in Windows 10. So that operating system will be really cloud-enabled, mobile-enabled, and even further as what we have today. And that is where you can then also utilize what you invest in today. Some related content. Some resources that are available, and please complete an evaluation form because your input is important. So with that, we have 2 minutes left for questions. If there are any questions, I'll be around here for a few minutes if you have specific questions that you want to ask personally. So like I said, we're now rounding off the early deployment program for Windows Phone 8.1, and now are onboarding Windows 10 customers in the Windows Client Tap program and First Wave, what we call it. That's a deeper working with the customer model, where we work with the customer from start to end to implement those new capabilities. No questions?
Many of the things that you said can be done just using
Yeah, no, so I didn't, so the question is, why would we need all this if we could use most of it with Exchange Active Sync? There are quite a lot of policies that you cannot configure with Active Sync. So that's not only all the a lot of the policies that are available through the GUI, if you look at Intune and Config Manager, but if you look at the configuration settings you can configure in the protocol guide, the Active Sync number of settings and policies is this. The entire OMA URI policies is this. So the whole spectrum of managing that device through an MDM becomes much richer if you use an MDM. And that's only for settings. But if you want to do things like provisioning an entire email profile or provisioning VPN profiles, Wi-Fi profiles, those things you cannot do with Active Sync. Deploying certificates which cap, so that's why customers implement this type of infrastructure, because they need those capabilities. So Active Sync is definitely a fit for companies that want limited mobile device management. But if you want more, those things that I just mentioned, you really need to move to an MDM-like solution. Sir? Sorry, I can't hear you. It's
why is it convenient to supply this number of updates? Why don't you supply just one update globally, like Apple does?
You mean the part? So yeah. The question is, why is it so difficult to deliver all these updates?
That
is because we are depending on the MOs to approve deploying these updates. The MOs have often a deep integration with the phone, and especially in the area where you talk about the radio stack of the phone. So they want to be 100% sure that, because they also need to keep in mind, they need to deliver the support on those phones. So users that buy the phone will call their help desk when something goes wrong. So only they can now say, yes, this is what we have approved to deploy. So does that make sense? It will change. So there will be a change, but let's have a chat about it after this session. Okay, that's the end of the session. Thank you very much for coming by. And like I said, I'll be around for...